So this is AC 141, and it says this: innumerable things might be said about man's own, or the proprium, in describing its nature with the corporeal and worldly man, so that's one level, with the spiritual man, another level, and with the celestial man. With the corporeal and worldly man, his own, or proprium, is his all. He knows of nothing else than his own, and imagines, as before said, that if he were to lose this own, he would perish. With the spiritual man also, his own has a similar appearance, for although he knows that the Lord is the life of all, and gives wisdom and understanding, and consequently the power to think and to act, yet this knowledge is rather the profession of his lips than the belief of his heart. But the celestial man discerns that the Lord is the life of all, and gives the power to think and to act, for he perceives that it is really so. He never desires his own, nevertheless an own is given him by the Lord, which is conjoined with all perception of what is good and true, and with all happiness. The angels are in such an own, and they are at the same time in the highest peace and tranquility, for in their own are those things which are the Lord's, who governs their own, or them by means of their own. This own is the veriest celestial itself, whereas that of the corporeal man is infernal. But concerning this own more hereafter. So my sense of it, and how I've experienced things, is that, well, it's described in this reading, you know, like when you're in the midst of something, there's kind of no capacity to hear. We're just not in a state able to hear from what is coming from what is deeper, say from a truth perspective. We can't seem to access truth, but we can access the things we know on a more external memory sort of level. And that's sometimes all we can do, but that does not mean that what is more interior isn't present. It's just that the state requires to bring us to a point of, you know, hit the wall and bring us to the end of ourself in that particular state. And then there is this shift from that El Shaddai state to the Lord revealing his name, or revealing his presence and quality, because we've been brought to a state of reception in whatever area of our life that's being worked through. So perception, it's an old French word, Latin, right? So in the old French, and percept means, or perception has to do with knowing what to do. It's tied to the will. And it's a spontaneous knowing what to do. Whereas in the more modern sense of the meaning of the word, it's more passive. It's presented as insight into something, but that's more a function of the understanding. So intuition often is experienced as, this isn't right, but that's my sense of it anyway, or this is the way to go. Whereas with perception, there's no question of what is required. And so that kind of fits with the understanding of a spiritual state versus a celestial state. Spiritual state is trying to work it out because it functions from the understanding primarily. Whereas a celestial state, those things that were in the understanding have been worked into the will, and there is just a knowing response. So in that celestial state, the hells can't touch it. But in the spiritual state, there's always the wrestling and the struggle, and those states of, you know, the very things that are described here. Because what saves here is those more interior truths, finding vessels in the natural whereby they can be more permanently held in consciousness. The memory knowledges that have been falsified have to be sloughed off, and a new understanding of those things implanted through the work that we're given and the calling on of those more interior truths that relate to state. The scariness is that what's asked of us is to lay down our life. So the transition from natural to spiritual is a laying down of one's life. The transition from spiritual to celestial is the laying down of one's life, what we have defined ourselves by. So there are a couple of dimensions to self-examination. The first is that we examine what's arising in terms of the quality of our thoughts and feelings. That is, you know, an essential part of the work. That's what we do. We're constantly looking at what's arising within. However, we're doing that from a belief in ourself as capable of being able to discern the quality of what's arising. The other aspect of self-examination is to examine the nature of the self. And that's a different thing, because then we are on that scary kind of ground, right? Like, because now we're examining, who am I? And of course, this whole reading is about I am that I am. So you're put in front of, there is only one life, and it's the Lord. And you in yourself are nothing. That is a terrifying thing. For us, yes, but for all the spiritual associates that are locked into that and are invested in us holding to our own self-image as a self. So it's not just about us. I mean, the thing to remember in all that is that what we're being asked to lay down has no substance. And what the new state brings is a redefinition of our relationships to things. So because we only look at things from where we are, everything that's generated out of that, particularly in terms of projection into the future as to what might or might not be, is molestation. It's the activity of molestation and infestation, because, you know, who's in control here, right? It's the Lord. What is the Lord? Like, one way of defining the Lord is connection, genuine connection to what is. So you can't, in that sense, become isolated. What becomes isolated is that self that's trying to preserve itself. Yes, you can have that feelings of isolation arising out of that because of what it's being confronted with. But ultimately, what the Lord is doing is cultivating connection, because the being that is isolated is isolated whether it believes it's in connection with others or not. It's still isolated. And what the process reveals is that state. And what the word offers is the counter to that state. You know, we know these things deep down, but when we're caught up in the lower earth realm, all of that is forgotten, because that's the nature of weakening attachments to what is opposed to the Lord. You know, for there to be a state of peace or a state of rest, there has to be a movement toward not fighting against the Lord. So it has to do with bringing the self into submission under the Lord, under the Word, and then allowing the illumination that can come in regard to what's required of us to have its effect. And the thing with this is that in this particular reading, it was talking about those who were expecting to be liberated immediately. Right, that if the Lord's mercy could liberate people immediately, then there would be no one in a hellish state. But the Lord works by means of maintaining rationality and freedom, which means that he can't move us beyond where we're willing to go. So the descent of the New Jerusalem isn't something that happens apart from the willingness to receive the word into our life. It can't happen otherwise. So every mind has to be regenerated or be in the process of being regenerated if that experience of heaven is to be realized. And so the mind has to think from the word. And if people aren't thinking from the word, then the Lord can't do much with that, other than work with permissions and allowing whatever evils are needed to be manifest to manifest. And so that's what we see on the grander scale of world events. You know, what we're seeing is, and this is the irony of it all, we're seeing the condition of the church in those wars and things. It's a reflection of the church. And what we read here is that the spiritual church is stuck in hell. So that's the condition. And that's the conditions we all have to deal with. And there has to be a realization that that is how it is. Like these states that are built around what I want, my goals, my aspirations, all of that has to die if what is of the Lord is to be raised up. So it does lay emphasis as to why the Lord comes into the world to save the spiritual church. That whole teaching is about how the spiritual sense puts the lower into order so that it can be a support for itself. The tendencies towards believing the appearances of the word, you know, like we're all subject to those. That's Egypt. We're caught up in that all the time. And so we read ourselves into the text. And on a certain level, that's needed. That's part of the process. So we identify with what the psalm is saying when the psalmist is talking about using pronouns and, you know, we kind of infuse ourselves into it. The Lord will deliver me from this difficulty I'm facing. And yes, yes, he will. But the means by which he will probably isn't how you imagine it's going to be. And there's a whole section in this reading about people believing that they would be delivered instantly. So they've understood, yeah, the Lord's the liberator, the redeemer, that the Lord is going to save us. What they've skipped is how that process unfolds. And that's what we've been avoiding. And so we want the end without the work. And I mean, that's just so typical of human nature, right? We want the end, but we don't want to have to do the work to get there. So we see that without despair, there's no ground for reception. The despair leads to the reception of these truths because at that point, we're willing to cast ourselves on the Lord. So what this work does is it brings us into the present moment, which is that state between. Between what, you know, between our own imagination of what the future is and what the past has been. So the human mind lives anywhere but the present. So what is the present going to feel like when it's brought to it? It's going to feel like a void because all of its life has been geared toward either projection into the future or an interpretation of the past, anywhere but where the Lord is, which is in the present. And when we are brought to that place through this work, it seems, well, like we're disorientated. That sense of self that is so reliant on the future and the past for defining itself, because whatever view we take of the future or the past is illusionary. There's no reality there. It's all imagination. And here we're being brought to the only real thing, which is the Lord. And the Lord can only be found in what's arising in the moment. And that's why there's this disconfiguration thing happening every time we come to that place, because we are unsettled. Who we think we are gets unsettled. and there's forces that seek to pull us back into those illusionary states so that we feel like we have some stability and we live in the illusion that we are something that we're not. So that letting go of truth brings us to a truth, which is we have no capacity to use truth for what is good for the end. And when we give up our possession of truth, our ownership over truth, then the Lord is present, because we are not using truths to guide us. The truths are guiding us. They're guiding the process, and we are not a part of that. So these states are designed to have us take our hands off. And it's when you come through the other side of the state that you see the Lord's hand has been leading and guiding through the whole thing. So the process is about bringing us to a place where we can trust that the word is well able to do what it says it can do. And that's what these states reveal.